All right, another brief Steeler detour here for really gigantic news in the local sports scene, and that is that Pitt has relieved athletic director Heather Like of her duties. After right around 7 years, she was coming up on the end of her contract. Statement put out by the still relatively new chancellor, Joan Gable, earlier today, that congratulated Heather Like for the good things she had done, but basically said, and I quote, "As we enter a new era of college athletics, one that seems to change by the day, we need a new vision and a new leader of our athletics department. So let's bring on here on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing HVAC provider for over 50 years. Chris Peek from Panther Lair has been covering this program, this athletics department, all things Pitt athletics for decades now, Chris, and the simple question is why? Why did they do this?
I think there's a lot that was building up. I think that statement, I think that language was very intentional and pointed about needing a vision for the new era of college football and all the things and college athletics, you know, all the things we talk about. We talk about NIL, we talk about revenue sharing. These things are all relevant and you need a plan for it. And, you know, over the last few weeks and even longer, the last few months, I mean, the more and more we were hearing out of Pitt's athletic department is that maybe there wasn't a great plan. Maybe there wasn't a plan. You know, we know you could run the clock back 3 years and Pitt's athletic department with Heather Like's guidance was rather slow to get on board with NIL and really kind of dragged their feet. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that, but they were behind. There was more they could have done to support Pitt's collective with the NIL money of the Alliance 412, and they didn't. They were slow to do it. Every time something new, they were, you know, sort of given permission to do something new by state laws, they dragged their feet on it. And you can't have that. You need to have you needed to be on top of that, especially if you're a program like Pitt. And then revenue sharing comes in, and I think you should have been able to anticipate that and have a plan for it. And I just don't think the plan was in place, or at least not to Joan Gable's satisfaction. So, and I think there's a variety of reasons beyond that. You can get into things like financial health and HR, this and that. But I mean, I think those are some of the biggest issues. I think you need a strong leader with a strong vision for the future. And I think Joan Gable concluded they didn't have it at Pitt.
Let me ask you this, Chris, because we've heard all the stories about her interviewing at Northwestern, Michigan, and others. Her motivation, I'm just curious to do it. Number one, do you think she was doing it as leverage to try to get a new deal at Pitt? Or do you think, because Northwestern, even though I don't know that it's a big jump forward compared to Pitt, it is a Big Ten school, which has much more money available to it, more opportunities to do stuff with that money. I mean, what would be the motivation for interviewing so much, and how much did that hurt her in this whole process?
I mean, I don't think it helped. I think, you know, like Ohio State, that was an obvious tie. She had spent a lot of time there. So, of course, and who wouldn't want the athletic director job at Ohio State? It's one of the, you know, probably best jobs in college sports. But some of these other things, I think Michigan State she was tied to. I think there was one or two West Coast schools. I think
USC was one of them, yeah.
Right. And you know, it's 7 years. That's a long time. People interview for new jobs and you know, not everybody stays in a job for a long time. But like at a certain point, you're like, well, why do you keep interviewing? Are you really trying to build up Pitt? Are you really trying to make Pitt better? Or are you trying to
better yourself,
improve your resume? Right. And I mean, there's a $300 million project going on right next to the Peterson Event Center. And yes, the Olympic sports, they needed upgraded facilities. It was long overdue. But that's a huge amount of money to spend for an athletic department and a school that maybe doesn't have that kind of money to spend there. And so you say, well, what were you working on? You obviously want to improve the experience for the Olympic sports athletes, but boy, you know, you build this new facility, it looks good on a resume too. So you start questioning motivations, I think, a little bit. The Northwestern thing, I wonder if that was an attempt to leverage, use leverage to get a better contract than what she was being offered. And what we've you know, from what we understand, this summer, Pitt kind of came to her with maybe a 1 year extension, maybe a 2 year extension. I think she wanted more than that, probably 3 or 5 years. And so you wonder if Northwestern was like, well, yeah, that would be a good job to take. Like you said, it's in the Big Ten, there's more money available, and you can maybe go to the negotiating table with Pitt and try and leverage a little bit. Well, that blew up when they hired the Villanova guy. Now there's no more leverage. She comes back, and 2 weeks later, she's fired. So I can only presume, and it's just an assumption on my part, that contract negotiations over the last 2 weeks didn't go how either party would have hoped. Although Heather Like was at the Cincinnati game on Saturday. She was out there carrying on business as usual. So this might have been a Sunday evening, Monday morning decision. I don't know.
Chris Peek from Panther Lair. I know you only have 2 minutes here, Chris, so I'll finish this with a two-part question. One, not hard to find people over there who think that Heather was a little overextended financially on Victory Heights, which is to say maybe not raising enough money. I want to know if you've heard, if you had heard that too. And two, just the question of, do you agree with this? Is this the right move?
I mean, on number one, I mean, absolutely. They were never going to raise $300 million or $250 million to pay for an Olympic sports facility. Like, the Pitt fan base was never going to, they were never going to raise that money. It was going to be debt. It was going to be debt service either for the athletic department or the university. And I think the university took on a lot of that money. Now, if they were trying to raise money for a new football stadium, yeah, they could probably raise $300 or $400 or $500 million for that. They would need $750 to actually get it built, but they could raise more money. They were never going to raise that kind of money for an Olympic sports facility. And so, yeah, that was all, that was taking on debt. That was all going in the red. Is this the right move? That's tough for me to say. I never like saying, oh, somebody should be fired. You know, I feel kind of awkward about it. But I do think, you know, there are certain demands for this job in this era of college athletics. You have to be able to do certain things. It's not just like going out and kissing babies and shaking hands to raise money from your big donors anymore. You need to be a business person. This is as much as it's ever been and more than it's ever been. This is a business. You've got to make it work. And, you know, it's cold and it's unfeeling and it's cynical, but the reality is you've got to be able to make football and men's basketball work. And I would say football like three times first before you get to men's basketball, because that's what's going to raise your money. So you have to figure out what you're going to do to generate NIL money to improve the football and men's basketball programs. You got to figure out how you're going to pay this revenue sharing, $22 million that wasn't in your budget to begin with. Like, you have to find out how you're going to do this, because you have to support those programs. Because if football doesn't win and football doesn't make money, the whole operation falls apart. So that's what they need now.
Speaking of that very quickly, and Bob, we're going to let you go. I promise, Chris. But, I know you have to go.
Can I answer my one thing? I just want to say, he just described what I said to you. It should be a general manager. That's what you have to have today. Business savvy.
But something else springs to mind here. Lastly, and it's just out of curiosity, Chris, the idea of a football stadium is a non-starter, right? Like, nobody's hearing behind the scenes that Joan Gable is a fan of that idea. It's a non-starter, right?
I don't know what Joan Gable thinks of it. I know Heather Like looked into it. To me, it should be a non-starter. That's literally like $750 million to make that work. If you want to build it where the OC lot is or something,
Bob will lend them some money.
Hey, in order to make money, you got to spend money. And if you're going to really try to make big money, you got to do something here to change the dynamics.
But I don't know I don't think an on-campus stadium would get you the return, Bob. I don't. Like, even if you right-size it so it only seats 45,000, if they start losing games, it's not going to matter. I mean, like, they have to raise money. If they're going to raise money, if they think they could raise $500 million for a stadium, put all those efforts into raising money for NIL. Get the players. The players will win the games. And then if you win the games, then you can start trying to, you know, raise money.
But do they have the wherewithal here in this community to do that? I have my doubts about that. How many donors are at the level of Ohio State or Alabama who would willingly do it? You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ceiling to it. You've got to find, but you have to find those big, well, they're trying to cultivate a lot of like the smaller donations. Hey, give $20 a month. And that's good. But you need David Tepper or one of these guys to come in with some big cash, because you have to get the players. This is what the game is now. General manager is exactly what you need at the top of the athletic department and in the football program. And I think you're seeing programs move away from the coaches making all those personnel decisions about who they recruit. And some programs are taking on general managers because that's the job now. You've got to manage a budget. It's like a pro sport more than it has ever been before. And they need an athletic director who understands it and embraces it.
Where would they put the stadium?
Tear down the OC lot, you know. There's no parking. I mean, there'd be nowhere to park. And you would have to build up the back of that mountain there. I guess they could try and buy out half the Hill District, but I don't know how well that would go over. You have a very small footprint. You could possibly fit a stadium in with no parking, no infrastructure whatsoever. It would be a nightmare. Have you driven through Oakland and Pitt plays like North Carolina in basketball?
Yeah, I have.
Have you driven through Oakland?
12,000 people.
Have you driven through Oakland, period, in the last 6 months? I can't. I've never seen anything like it.
It's all closed.
It never ends.
Right. So you want to bring like 50,000 people to Oakland on a Saturday. I know back in 1982, it worked out great. Well, I would prefer to avoid that disaster and take the place that's right off the highway with ample parking everywhere.
Thank you, Chris, for overextending here. I know you had to be out by 11:20.
And thanks, Chris.
And I'm still delaying your departure. Thank you.
That's anything for you, Joe.
Bob, is Joan Gable related to Clark, to your knowledge?
There probably is some lineage there, yes. Probably.
Maybe.
How many Gables? Well, right. Then again, Kim Gable at our station. I should ask her.
Is there a Betty Gable? Or is that Betty?
Who's White? Betty, no,
Betty White? Betty.
How many Bettys do I know?
Betty Ann? Was there a Betty Gable? Who's the other famous Gable? Bob, they got to build this
Gable's
stadium.
Kim Gable's one of our anchors.
Betty
I should
Grable.
Ask her.
Betty Grable.
Oh, Grable,
yeah.
Not Gable.
Yeah.
Gable.
Right.
I'm one of the key people in the entire city that want Pitt to build this stadium.
So do I.
Ideally,
I want this stadium.
Ideally,
I don't care about any of the logistics or
it.
The money. I
no,
just want a stadium.
All those houses.
Well, ideally, if you can do it, I think that would really make a statement, and I think it would start the engine.
Where would you build it?
I don't
Bob?
Know enough about, you know, I can't even figure out how to pick weeds half the time. You're asking me about an architectural demand about where you would put that stadium. I have no idea. Just the hills, the limited access, you'd have to tear a lot of stuff down. But
yeah.
I'm sure there's somebody out there who would have a good idea.
So my,
who better than City Limits to come up with this idea?
Well,
right?
It's funny because my good friend Joey and I have gone to a lot of Pitt football, Pitt basketball games, and I have this conversation with him every time we drive through Oakland because they live there. And basically from him talking to other people in Oakland, like students and stuff like that, it doesn't seem like a lot of the students want the stadium, at least in his mind, and that it would have to require tearing down a lot of houses there because the stadium,
they built a softball baseball facility up
right
there.
So that area is where you would probably put a stadium or maybe in South Oakland somewhere.
But
there's no room.
It would require a lot of demolition.
You'd have to buy people out.
An underground stadium, Bob.
That would be epic.
They made one at Madison Square Garden. You have to take an elevator to the hockey rink. We should take an elevator downward. We can all wear miners' helmets to the games.
The last time I went downward on an elevator at Pitt, you were there and you petted me on the head.
Ironically, that was a Heather Like incident. You were with Heather Like and you deemed her way more important than me. And I, like a child, was so excited to see you. We had just started doing shows together. And I said, "Hi, Bob." And he walked by me and petted me on the head like I was a puppy.
I didn't do that.
Your
recollection is way off on that one. You interrupted a conversation I was had. I could not just
interrupt. All I said was, "Hi, Bob."
No, you said more than that. And you
surprised you didn't throw me a little dog treat. Limits, can you believe that happened?
First of all, that's his.
The description that you're giving, yes, I can believe it.
Bob, have you met Joan Gable yet?
No, never have.
Neither have I.
No.
I think I never had an interview with Heather the whole time she was there, now that I think of it.
Well, I've done stuff with her, seen her out on, you know, I mean, very, very active person in, you know, going to events, being there. But again, this job has become so massive that I think it takes more than one person. You have to have a big staff. You have to have the right people who have business mindsets to understand how this is working. And more than anything else, that next person has to be good at figuring out connecting dots and relationships that result in fundraising money. If you don't get that, you're going to not be successful. I don't care what school you go to. Now, having said the Big Ten, there are some openings potentially. Did I read where Rutgers has an opening? Rutgers is a Big Ten school. They have a lot of money. I think based on
the good things she did here, she'll get another job. And she did do some good things here.
But it won't be of her choosing. It's going to be what is available and would she take
whatever. Oh, yeah, that's the other part. I mean, if you're interviewing for job after job, at some point, doesn't your employer say, "Do you want to be here?" Like,
yeah, I think that's a factor in what
happened.
If
you really want to go somewhere else, then go. All right, Bob, back to the Steelers, and let's deal with the officiating from yesterday. They sucked. And so did Dean Blandino on the broadcast, incidentally. When it came to that play with Miles Killebrew, where I thought that was a good call, he inadvertently
held him, twisted him, and threw him into
She's just trying to protect his punter, ironically, there, is what Killebrew's doing. But it was the right call. And then who was the play-by-play guy? Joe Davis?
Yes.
Goes to Dean Blandino, who we hear from like once per broadcast. He has one job. Render an opinion, Dean. You were the NFL's vice president of officiating. So he throws it to Dean Blandino. I'll tell you exactly how the conversation went, if you'd like me to do that, Bob. It goes to Blandino on the Killebrew play, and Davis says, "Dean Blandino, what do you think?" Blandino pipes in and says, "So I'm looking at this, and they can get together and talk about, you know, was the player blocked into the contact?" Thanks, Dean. I could have told the whole world that. Bobby has one opinion. Did you hear Brady yesterday? Was he any good?
Yeah, I heard a lot of people didn't like. I think it's going to take some time to warm up, but he was not willing to, from a lot of people I've talked to, criticize Deshaun Watson when it was very easy to do that yesterday.
I actually did hear some of it, and there was something, his ability to sort of string words together, which I've ironically lost in describing his inability to do it, was not good. It just didn't
sound
right.
I just think he
right.
was nervous. I just think, I'll give that time.
And you're right, he's got to, come on. If there's one guy that you can that everybody's ripping in the league that you could feel like you justifiably could, it's Deshaun Watson. It's a disaster. Tell us more about what is he seeing? What is he seeing on the field, and why is he playing so horrifically bad? Is it all about the offensive line? What's happening out there? Miscommunications with receivers? Come on, Tom. They're paying you $300 million.
Well, and then, you know, there a guy like Olsen had to take a pay cut to make way for Tom Brady. Olsen is much better at this point, and
he
I know
was good
Brady's
yesterday.
Just starting.
By far. Crew last night did a great job.
Yeah. By the way, let's get back to the officiating.
On the Steeler game.
Yeah. Davis and Greg Olsen.
Before I say that, the you mentioned Watson. You want to talk about a team that wants to make, or an ownership that should want a mulligan? It's the Baker Mayfield decision to let him go.
Oh, man.
The numbers have just been unbelievable.
He went full Drew Brees yesterday. He was great.
He was the best quarterback in football yesterday. 4 touchdowns, no picks. But then you compare that to Watson and what they gave up to get Watson, what they paid Watson.
I think that finally tears apart that organization, like all the ramifications of it. One, he strikes me as not a great leader, and now he's a terrible quarterback, and they're paying him all that money, guaranteed. Two, they've sacrificed years of draft picks, years where they could be building up their
team,
and free agents. And I just think the whole thing, the fan base, I think it's a demoralizing situation in Cleveland right now, and it's been teetering. And I know Stefanski, everybody thought they were great last year. It's been teetering because of Watson. And this is Flacco saved their year last year. It's gonna fall apart. They're gonna fall apart.
And Stefanski will ultimately pay the price, but it's Jimmy Haslam who should hold himself, look in the mirror, and hold, because he was the guy who decided to make this Watson deal.
Right.
It wasn't Stefanski.
Baker Mayfield led the Cleveland Browns to a playoff win. Not just any win, by
gritty
the way.
Too.
They,
playing
they beat
injured
the Steelers. Yeah.
Leadership kind of tendencies in every way you look.
Took the Cleveland Browns to a playoff win. That's like Terry Francona being the guy who took the Red Sox to a World Series title. You build a statue for that guy. You don't fire him. Of course, the Red Sox did, and so did the Browns. You build a statue for that guy.
It was interesting.
You give him a lifetime contract.
Interesting that, you know, at one point, Baker Mayfield was free to go wherever he wanted, and the Steelers were in the market for a quarterback.
And I was arguing for
him. I remember. That's why I bring it up. You not that you jumped off the Trubisky train, but you were jumping on the Baker Mayfield train. And I understood it, because that's a situation where there's more to tap into with him. And again, I look at the gutsiness that he played with, the injuries he played through.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson's not playing through anything, and he looks like he's just...
Well, he might be. They say his shoulder's hurt.
Okay.
I don't know.
Play through it.
It's the Trubisky train.
There was no doubt about it.
As soon as I take credit for one good prediction, he hits me with that. All right, back to Brady for a second. Let's hear, is it Scott Hansen of Red Zone ripping Brady?
Yeah, first it's the call of Brady and Kevin Burkhardt of this field goal attempt, which was originally a 66-yard field goal attempt from Braden Aubrey. And then Brandon Aubrey ended up attempting a 71-yard field goal, but they decided against it after a timeout. And this is what was said.
This is a 71-yard attempt. And now the Browns will call a timeout.
Maybe everyone's going to rethink this one.
71 yards.
Go to the Jets down.
Oh, come on. Brady's got to get more excited than that in the booth. This is going to be a
Turner. That
was Hanson.
This is going to be a 71-yarder.
I don't know. You know, it was his first time out, Bob. There was a great story on it by Charles Robinson. I think, is it Yahoo Sports?
Yes.
And as Dan Wetzel refers to that column, he says he really hit on the idea that it's a bit jarring for someone who's that big of an A-list star in and out of football to do the mostly mundane work of calling a game. That hits on it for me. When I tuned into that game, at the beginning, it was on. It was just jarring. Like, why is Brady doing this? Peyton Manning does his own cast, Manning cast for games. To sit in a booth like that and do that for a high A-list celebrity, someone who's high on the list like that, that part really, it is jarring to me.
$300 million. That's probably the reason. I don't care how rich he is, $300 million to do that job.
For sure, for sure that's the reason.
That's more than anyone, by far, lapping the field.
Who else has done it? Nobody's on his level for Super Bowls, but as far as being like
Tony Romo was somebody who he had Jessica Simpson, all that stuff happened.
Yeah, I mean, but not in the same stratosphere, I don't think.
But similar, and he's taken it and, you know, made it his own.
Who have been the Monday night? Well, Monday night they've had some.
Well, Monday night, but they've tried so many because they wanted a different approach, and that was hard to find. They eventually got back to, you know, football. You can bring in, who did they have? Dennis Miller did it. Who else?
Tony Kornheiser.
Tony Kornheiser did it.
Who left after a year? Who was it? The
Steve Levy and those guys?
No. The tight end, Jason Witten.
Or Witten.
Oh, that was
bad.
He
went back to play, but I don't think he was that good anyway.
Neither was the officiating.
I still maintain Chris Collinsworth is one of the best in the business. He does it in a way that he knows everything with the telestrator works.
But he fits more of the profile. A lunch bucket type player.
And Olsen is the same way. Olsen is understated, but he's good.
It's just weird seeing somebody of that level in terms of Q rating and celebrity doing that kind of work. It was jarring. That's a good word for it.
But I would give it time before I make any assessment on him. It's the first time in there. I'm sure he was a little bit nervous, but, you know, he's got to be more willing to throw some criticism and quote shade at people.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree. All right, to the officiating from yesterday. Let's start with the Watt offside call that ruined a turnover, a great play by him, and led to the Falcons' only touchdown. Bob, what was Hokie saying? Because I was texting with him at the time, and he said he hadn't seen an angle that was definitive yet. Did you guys ever get a definitive angle?
No. And that's the problem.
So what was your thought? Good call, bad call?
I thought it was a bad call. So many times, you know, you try to judge these things and look at things that you can use. You know, there's film study that gives you indications of what guys do. When you use that to your advantage, you shouldn't be penalized for it. And I think in that case, he was. Because if you look at the movement, sure, he moved. You're talking about Watt here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he moved, but he didn't get to the neutral zone. He was lined up a yard back, and he moved trying to time this whole thing perfectly. And
I think I agree with you there because of one angle I saw. Having said that, I kind of get being fooled by that because his instincts and his what would you call it on that play? His ability to beat everybody to the snap. I could see being fooled by that as an official.
I could too.
That's a tough one. I don't have a huge problem with that one.
Officials have allowed left tackles specifically to get an extra jump.
Yes.
And they never throw a flag on it.
I know.
Now, if you're going to do that, you may as well not do that to a defensive player like Watt. Plus, it's Watt. I think you give him the benefit of the doubt if it's a close thing. Just because he studies everything. He knows what he's trying to do. Very similar to Troy Polamalu in his anticipation of a snap count and when he can jump.
I understand that one. The one I had a problem with, a bigger problem, was Pickens down the left sideline with the offensive pass interference. And by the way, I think that was the series that preceded Atlanta's first touchdown. So again, and again, every big play down the field in a game that has hardly any is a game-changing play. That was nothing. You see that on every play down the field. It was a little bit of infighting, and I thought that the rule was you had to extend your arms on such a play to be called for something like that. Terrible call there.
Well, I think that's the problem. The standard becomes just a little bit of contact and people calling it. You can't do that. It has to be, to me, pretty obvious. Yeah, there was a little, but they're hand fighting. He didn't push him. I think the defensive back probably sold it a little bit. And from the angle of that official, I guess you know, they're putting an emphasis on these things. Call it. But I wouldn't call it. I'd let things. I would rather let guys determine what is and what isn't a big time penalty. If you start calling that stuff like hands to the face, sometimes hands just go up. It's not intended to do. I thought they missed the call on Harris with the helmet being pulled off. That to me was clear cut. If you're going to call that play, then you should call that play.
And by the way, I thought they missed that on Najee too. But the stupidest rule on the books in the NFL right now is taunting. You saw Najee, and I kind of like this about him.
But he should have been flagged.
He runs like a maniac. He gets up in people's faces and is jawing, and Steelers players got called for that last year, and everybody ripped them. My point, was it last year in L.A. that it was Deontay getting called
Deontay
for that?
Deontay Johnson,
is my memory right?
I think so.
A couple guys did. Maybe Pickens, too. It's such crap. These guys get up. In all these games, everyone I'm watching, they get right up after a play, get right in somebody's face, and is jawing in their face. That, according to this idiotic rule, is taunting, and that's what Najee did.
Right, and later they got Broderick Jones for getting into some place where I don't know what he did to deserve a penalty on an offsetting call.
So now there will be a play later in the year where somebody gets up and jaws in somebody's face, and they will get called for it. It's so stupid, Bob.
Yeah, it's erratic and it's inconsistent. Same is with the roughing the passer. I saw four different plays yesterday.
So did I.
One of them was ridiculous that they would call even roughing the passer. The other two were okay. And then there was one that I thought has no business being called. You just, again, though, the league is putting pressure on these guys to call anything that looks like.
I know,
like,
but they don't. Sometimes
some,
they
some
don't.
Some they do and some they don't.
Speaking of Brady, and I felt this way for years. We all feel, I bet, sometimes in sports like we're the only one either seeing something or complaining about something. The Brady rule exists, does it not? That if you're that as long as you're not thrown into somebody, you're not allowed to hit the quarterback below the knees in the pocket. Am I right about that?
Yes.
That rule exists.
Especially if you're trying to get out of the way, but you still make contact.
I saw that all over the place yesterday. Aiden Hutchinson, who had a great game, dove into Matthew Stafford's lower leg. It happens all the time, and it doesn't get called in the NFL, the Brady rule. I think they're so obsessed with the high hit on the quarterback that they forget all about the injurious low hit. It drives me crazy, Bob. And here's the other thing, the hip drop. There were instances of that yesterday that didn't get called. Njoku got injured on the textbook definition of a hip drop tackle. Josh Allen also got victimized by it and freaked out at the official because it didn't get called. That rule's a disaster.
It's hard to put that one and call it because the way guys tackle.
The hip drop?
Yeah, you know there are three components to the hip drop, and if they detect that they're all three met, they'll throw the flag. But there are sometimes, even without a third component, you can do damage to a guy tackling that way. So, I mean, it's just a difficult sport to officiate, I think, and they're making it more difficult by putting all these, you know, points of emphasis on the table every single year. And if you don't live up to it, then they're going to dock you for possibly getting a playoff game or anything beyond that.
Then what about the Brady rule? Do you agree with me? I see quarterbacks get hit below the knee all the time, and it's never, almost never called. It is a rule.
I know. But they don't. They're very erratic in calling it and enforcing it. I agree with you. So, but there were. I mean, there were. I hate always. The officiating's been inconsistent. A lot of it's bad, but it goes both ways. There were some calls. I thought Atlanta got called for a hands to the face, which was a ticky tack call. Also, you know, there's a time and a place to call one of those plays. It has to be pretty egregious.
And they missed an egregious face mask on Najee.
Yeah, well,
they ripped his helmet off.
Yeah.
His helmet was ripped off.
I wouldn't describe it as ripped off, but I mean, he pulled it off.
By the face mask.
But you're not allowed to do that. Regardless of it was pulled, ripped, subtly, it's still not allowed to happen.
Here's the other thing, Bob, about officiating yesterday. And I'm not right on much, but I was right on this one. As soon as this new kickoff rule came out, I said, wait a second. So if you kick it out of the end zone, they only get to bring it to the 30? Because in the XFL, you get to bring it to the 35. So now we're talking a 10-yard difference from where it was, the 25. All anybody's going to do is kick it out of the – why would you risk a kick return? Just give them the ball 5 yards from where they had it last year at the 30. And sure enough, week one, it's a total dud because, as Florio put it, this was through 15 games with the new rule. 64% of kickoffs have been touchbacks. 64%. How could they not see that that was going
to
happen?
If they really want to engage people to return and make a return, move the kickoff even back further, or if they kick it into the end zone, make it a painful kick into the
40.
End zone. 40-yard line.
Last year, 73% touchbacks. This year, 63.5.
Yeah,
is that the big difference?
The starting
position is
almost identical, even with some returns. It doesn't get much beyond the 25 to the 28-yard line. So you're not exactly changing the dynamic, although having said that, there was one dynamic kickoff return yesterday for a touchdown.
Well, we saw a couple last year, too. It happens.
It happens. It's not going to happen a lot. And I don't think you change the strategy here at all. I think they're trying to play both sides like the NFL will do. Player safety is still important, but we still want to get the return game back to maybe what it was more exciting.
No, it's cosmetic player safety. At the same time, they're saying these guys get hurt on kick returns. They're arguing for an 18th game, regular season.
Well, I mean, exactly. But the point is, here's another thing we should talk about.
This is just stupid.
If I'm a player, I am not in favor of these international games, especially on surfaces which are less than
horrendous.
Adequate.
Horrendous.
They're trying real hard. If I were the Players Association, Joe, I would say, wait a minute. In the next contract, we have to make some amendments here. You're not going to take us all over the world to play this, especially on conditions that can lead to injury.
Yes.
And there were a lot of those potential situations in that Brazilian game.
And speaking of injury, breaking news, Cameron Johnston out for the season.
Yeah, he needs surgery.
Season-ending knee injury.
What a horrible break.
It looked like a torn ACL as soon as it happened.
Killebrew just trying to protect his guy. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is.
Really,
it's just one of the things that happens. And now they got to search for a punter. And that's not an easy thing to do because the guys who are unemployed normally have issues. They signed Johnston to a pretty good deal. And
Miller's available.
Bob, I know a guy. I know a guy who's available.
Don't tell me his.
He's a little
Presley
familiar
Harvin.
To the Steeler end zone. He might not find the Steeler end zone a lot.
Who's that?
Or actually, his punt does find the Steeler end zone a lot. Mr. Presley Harvin.
Oh. No,
come on.
That will happen.
I don't think they'll do it. No, I don't.
What about Brad Wing? Would you bring him back?
I would. Wing and a prayer. Why not?
Wing was way better than Harvin.
Deborah Winger. Bob, here's the other thing. Oh, what you said before was true. Atlanta thought that was a 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-2, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that the Steelers did too, at least some of them on the field, and maybe Arthur Smith. That was a very odd formation and play call if it was just a regular play. The Falcons definitely thought it was 4th-and-1.
The way they reacted, it was a turn of possession.
How
often
do you see that in a game?
You don't. You don't.
Well, one side of the sticks said first down, and the other side said fourth down.
Right.
So on
and
opposite sidelines,
Russell
lines,
Wilson
it was different.
Trying to tell Justin Fields, it's second down. It's not, it's a second down. How can that happen?
Incredible.
And why are there still chains?
Bob, I'm going to give you the choice of our noon topic. Are you ready for this, Bob?
Yes.
One, we could go around the league and give thoughts around the league, or we could save that till 1 o'clock. Two, we could grade the Steelers and their coaches along with Ray Fittipaldo's report card. It's completely up to you.
We'll do Ray and grades, and then we should come back to it because there are a lot of interesting things that happened yesterday in the NFL. You know, different games, teams.
So you want to do grades next and then go to NFL?
Yeah.
Okay. Then that's what we'll do, Limits. You heard it. We'll do it, won't we?
Let's do it.
All right. 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills, it's noon. Time to stop blindly paying those increasing auto and home insurance premiums. Contact the Buell Insurance Agency in Gibsonia and see what they can do for you. Call City Limits to win tickets to the Outlaw Music Festival at Pavilion at Star Lake on September 14th. The Outlaw Music Festival. Caller number 3 to City Limits, 412-928-9370. Our football talk there presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You can get tons of benefits. Still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. We got a lot to get to. We're going to go back in the 1 o'clock hour to a budding quarterback controversy because that's what it is.